Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Turn of the Dead by Alex Kosh. Translated by Zachary J. Lerang. Narrated by Zach Ullman. Part 1. The Voice of the Dead. A representative from the Ministry of Internal Affairs for the City of Moscow has confirmed rumors of a robbery at the European Bank's central storage facilities. Rumors of a human figure walking right through a wall that were allegedly captured on video, however, have been traced to a delusional episode on the part of one of the security personnel, who was later discovered to have been drinking while on duty. Channel 1 News. I voluntarily request to be relieved of my duties as cemetery watchman because, take this job and crossed out, my psychological state prevents me from fulfilling all the duties pertaining to the role. I also request that my previous statement, wherein I mentioned corpses walking around the cemetery, goddamn zombies, crossed out, be considered null and void, the result of alcohol consumption. Letter to the directors of Troyekurovo Cemetery. The clan war between the Unnameables and the Spirit of the Hunt has reached an absolutely unprecedented scale. More and more smaller clans keep getting drawn in on one side or the other, widening the conflict even further. The clans are dividing cities, instances, and level-up zones among themselves, which creates endless complications for unaffiliated players who find themselves having to choose one side or the other. It seems that soon every resident in Arctania will be wrapped up in this conflict, and that it's only a matter of time before the fighting grows into an actual geographical division of territory. It also seems that we're in for a global conflict between these two factions of players at the very same time that the Inferno's forces are gathering more strength by the day. Arctania Today. Chapter 1. The helicopter was dropping. Besides gravity, of course, there was another force weighing heavily on my mind during those terrifying moments. The knowledge that I was the only one who could possibly do anything to save us. Naumov and the pilot were just normal people, while Mark was an illusionist. What could he do? Besides maybe make our fall a little more dramatic to behold? I could at least try to use magnetism and then... Well, what then? First and foremost, how and where could I apply it? Thankfully, all these speculative thoughts flew out of my head within a few hundredths of a second, and I began to act immediately. I directed my magnetism toward the ground and poured as much mana into it as I possibly could. There was no other option anyway, and I didn't have time to think about what the point of this move would be, or even whether it could really work at all. After all, trying to use magnetism to manipulate dirt wasn't really a winning strategy. Nevertheless, I kept stubbornly blasting magnetism out in front of us all the time. Thankfully, we were falling nose first, and the sight of the rapidly approaching trees provided some... Well, let's call it motivation. Strangely, none of the others present in the cockpit were screaming. The only one making any noise at all was the pilot, who was swearing to himself under his breath. It might be that the absence of any distractions enabled me to concentrate on my sensations, but whatever the case... I felt the exact moment, just as we started to hear branches snapping outside, when my magnetism finally ran into an unexpected source of resistance and its emanation started bouncing back at us. It felt like two opposing magnetic poles had come into contact with one another. Totally unable to comprehend what might be happening, I just turned up the power as much as I could, and sure enough, it felt to me like our descent was slowing down somewhat. "More mana!" Mark screamed. He clearly realized that we were slowing down because of me. Alas, I was already doing everything I could. Apparently, Mark was too, since a huge inflatable cushion suddenly appeared out of nowhere right in front of us, one of the ones stunt people use on movie sets. Then I felt the force of the impact, and everything went dark. I woke back up before the others did, to find myself hanging head down by my seatbelts. Maybe that I just got lucky, or maybe I owed a thank you to my improved attributes. After all, they definitely had an effect on my body, and my endurance was definitely leveled up more than the illusionist's was. Don't get me wrong, my body still felt like it was on fire. All in all, though, it didn't feel like I had really suffered any serious injuries. The helicopter was stuck in the trees, which helped soften no less than my magnetism did, and Mark's illusory cushion had certainly played a part in that, too. I had clearly underestimated his ability. After all, he could obviously create illusions that were at least partially material, as that massive cushion was. For a little while, I just hung there by my seatbelts, regaining my senses and struggling to take in the full detail of the surreal situation we were in. Fireballs flying through the air, a helicopter crash, and me trying to slow our fall. It was just insane.
"Whoa. Alive?" Mark croaked.
"Yep," I confirmed, wincing in pain. It felt like my head was splitting open.
"I don't care about you. I'm talking about me," he snarled. "It's your fault we crashed in the first place. What a great idea, bringing a gremlin with you, idiot."
His illusory guise as a stern military man was gone, and the kid didn't seem to be in any hurry to recreate it. Maybe he was just saving mana, but he might well have been totally depleted anyway. Creating a materially solid cushion beneath us couldn't have come cheap. No. If the gremlin hadn't knocked out the helicopter, we'd have gotten hit by that fireball and burned alive.
"That's just speculation. They could have missed," Mark objected. "And anyway, why the hell are we still hanging here? What if they decide to shoot another one at us?"
"I can't hear them anymore. They probably flew off." Slowly and carefully, I unbuckled my belts and used magnetism to grab onto the helicopter's iron chassis. Unfortunately, my ability didn't work, and I plummeted down onto the back of the front seat. It was a miracle I didn't break anything. The impact made my head ache worse and got me worried that I might have suffered a concussion, which wouldn't have been at all surprising given the circumstances.
"Ow!"
Obviously, I must have spent all my mana on magnetism, slowing down the helicopter's fall. It was just too bad I couldn't really sense exactly how much mana I had. That would have been really nice to know. Mark was moving more carefully, and consequently, he pulled off a much softer landing. Then we checked on Naumov and the pilot, who were still sitting in the front seats. They were both alive, but still unconscious. Pulling two fully grown men out of the wreckage was no easy task, especially considering Mark's less than impressive physical condition and my complete lack of mana. Later, it occurred to me that if our enemies really wanted to kill us, they could probably have done it 20 or 30 times while we were crawling out of the downed helicopter. In fact, the real miracle was that we didn't end up killing ourselves in the attempt. "Hear anything?" I asked Mark, just to be safe. I didn't really trust my own hearing after the fall.
"I guess you were right. Their helicopter must have flown away," he replied,
although he didn't sound especially confident. "There's nothing but trees around here. There's nowhere to land. I think they'll probably land as close as they can and come in on foot," I surmised. Just as a precaution, I activated magnetic sensitivity. Or rather, I tried to activate it, but I didn't even have enough mana for that. Plus, the attempt sent another burst of pain pulsing through my temples. "Damn it," I thought. "Life without a mana meter really sucks. At the very least, I'd be able to see how long I'd have to wait until I could use my abilities again." "So, we need to get out of here," I concluded. Thankfully, Naumov and the pilot both made it through the crash with no more than some minor scratches and bruises, and soon they were conscious once again. They both seemed to be in really good shape, actually, other than the fact that they threw up a few times and they were both walking like they'd been hit in the head with a baseball bat.
"Ugh. We're damn lucky we landed on these trees, I'll tell you that," sighed the pilot as he recovered his senses a little bit.
"Yeah, for sure," I chuckled nervously as I exchanged a glance with Mark. "The trees." The trees, magnetism, and the partially materialized illusion together were barely enough to save us. The pilot stood there for a few minutes, just blinking as he stared at Mark's face.
"Where did you come from, kid? And where's the soldier who was in the back seat?"
"Man, your head must have taken a beating in that crash," said Mark. "There was no soldier in the back seat."
Almost as soon as he recovered consciousness, Naumov reached down for his phone.
"It's burnt up," he remarked with surprise as he too turned to stare suspiciously at Mark.
Unlike the pilot, he knew perfectly well why the illusionist's appearance had changed.
"All our phones burned from the inside," Mark replied, throwing an irritated glance my way. "Somebody overdid it a little bit.
Well, sorry for burning up your electronics while I was saving all our lives, I snapped back instantly. Mark flinched. His nerves were shot, and I think the rest of us were in more or less the same condition. I mean, it seemed the only possible explanation for such a stupid complaint. Personally, I felt surprisingly calm, except for my nagging headache.
We need to get out of here before the dark side finds us, said Nomov. He sounded tense.
Really? Thanks for the tip, Mark hissed back acidly as he jabbed me in the shoulder. But first, a certain someone has to get a certain someone out of that helicopter, otherwise we'll fail the task.
Wow, I thought. I totally forgot about our prisoner. Obviously, the gremlin must still be hidden somewhere inside the helicopter.
All the electronics are dead, I reminded him. Where else could it be hiding?
Now Mav thought for a moment, then took his wristwatch off his arm. It was mechanical.
Maybe we could store him in here for the time being.
I took the watch from him, noting as I did so that it probably cost way more than my entire apartment. But I figured if he was willing to part with it, then so be it.
I'll try to get him in here, I agreed.
The problem was, of course, that I had no idea at all when my mana would regenerate to the point where I could create an electric lasso. But I didn't see any reason to mention that. I didn't have enough mana for magnetism either, of course, so I had to crawl back up into the cabin the old-fashioned way.
There's no chance this helicopter could explode, is there?
I shouted down from where I was hanging in the empty doorframe of the helicopter.
If it didn't explode on impact, you've got nothing to worry about, the pilot answered.
He had been listening attentively to our conversation the entire time. He obviously didn't know what we were talking about, but he seemed too nervous to ask any questions. I could only hope he knew what he was talking about. The first thing I would have to do would be to actually find the gremlin. After climbing back into the helicopter, I climbed up the central aisle and quickly found a purple light flashing in the one part of the instrument panel that was still working. That was good. All that remained was to figure out how to get him out of there. I tried to create an electric lasso, but it still wasn't working. Shit, I thought. How the hell can I figure out how much mana I have? I tried to focus on my internal sensations, as Mark had advised, but it didn't seem to help at all.
What's the holdup? Mark shouted.
Just a sec! I wasn't having any luck creating a lasso, even when I put my hand right up against the block in an effort to minimize mana expenditure as much as possible. If my in-game attributes were any guide to what was happening in the real world, my mana regeneration rate would be a couple points per minute. Enough time had passed for me to have regenerated maybe 40 points. But as far as I could remember, the minimum amount you needed for activating electric lasso was somewhere in the order of 60 points. In other words, I would need to wait about 10 more minutes, which was very possibly more time than we had to spare. And anyway, these calculations were all so approximate that in actual fact, the process might take anywhere from a matter of seconds to a half hour. Mana. Mana. How could I figure out how much I had? A throbbing pain once again erupted in my temples, so bad this time that my vision went a little bit dark. A moment later, in the bottom right corner of my field of vision, I saw a set of numbers very familiar from Arctania. A little meter, which read 35 of 1500. Whoa, I thought to myself. It finally happened. I reached the next stage of development, either in my abilities or else in the process of fusion with Arctania's in-game interface. Whatever the case, I would no longer need to tune into any special sensations to see how much mana I had, or how much using a particular ability cost me. This was all good news, but it actually didn't help me all that much in my current situation, except for confirming my assumption about how much mana I had. I lifted the watch up to the blinking purple light on the panel. Out of sheer desperation, I just started trying to talk to the gremlin.
Come on, just climb in here yourself, would you? Why do you want to sit out here anyway, now that Arkham's safe again? Don't you think it's time to get back to Arctania?
Mark's face appeared through the broken window frame underneath me.
You're trying to convince a brainless mass of energy to climb into that watch? Seriously? I'm still out of mana, I growled. This would have been so much easier if you had just sent him back into Arctania, back at the factory, like we planned, Mark reminded me angrily.
Maybe we could have avoided this whole mess. Instead, you chose the option where you have to hang here trying to reason with a little light on an instrument panel. At least I'm trying to do something. In theory, if my in-game reputation has any effect on gremlins in their chaos form, it might actually listen to me. Just tear that panel out and bring it with you. I glanced down skeptically at the instrument panel. I'm not going to be able to do that without tools. Mark jabbed a finger into my biceps. What's the point of working out if you can't even break an instrument panel off? Yeah, somehow I think I left that exercise out of my routine, I hissed back sarcastically. I'll have Mana for the lasso in about 10 minutes. That's not that long, and I'm just trying other options while we wait. Mark just grunted in reply, then waved his palm back and forth in front of the blinking purple light. Well, fine. Hey, psst, psst, psst. Come here, get into the watch. A sudden hiss filled the air, and one of the windshield wipers whipped over and smacked Mark right in the forehead. Maybe that massive energy isn't as brainless as you think, I noted as I turned back to the panel. Hey, buddy, come on. Just get in, will ya? If we leave here without you, the next people you see will be coming here to kill you. We've got a bit of a different mission. All we want to do is get you back to Arctania. It'll be totally safe, I promise. Miracle to end all miracles, it worked. The little purple light jumped out of the device and absorbed itself into the wristwatch. Ha! I exhaled happily. I told you! Mark's only reply was a certain one-finger gesture directed at the watch. I'd be happy to leave him for the dark side, if it wasn't for the quest. Now let's get the hell out of here as quick as we can. After climbing back down from the cabin, we rejoined Naumov and our pilot and hurriedly ran away from the scene of the helicopter crash. Our phones were burnt out, and since, as modern men, we could hardly find our way out of a parking lot without maps and GPS, we were choosing our direction practically at random. Having listened to some of our conversation, the pilot was originally trying to figure out what was going on. But Naumov silenced him pretty quickly by promising him a considerable sum as compensation for silence and emotional distress.
And no questions, Naumov warned him. We'll get a car, get to the city, and then you'll get your money. But only if you don't go sticking your nose where it doesn't belong.
We managed to make it about 100 feet before we heard a loud explosion from behind us that made us all drop to the ground immediately. Several hunks of steel shot past right above my head and buried themselves in a tree.
What the hell? Naumov shouted as he grabbed the pilot by the shoulder. Didn't you say it wouldn't explode? Yeah, and it shouldn't have, the man replied with surprise as he threw Naumov's hand off and rose to his feet with a grunt. This might surprise you, but I don't actually have a lot of experience with helicopter crashes. It's not the kind of thing you usually do more than once.
Mark couldn't hold back a nervous giggle. After all, he and I had been in that cabin just a few minutes before it exploded.
That must be what a fully maxed out luck attribute does for you.
I was inclined to agree. That was the second time we had miraculously survived something that seemed like certain death. Third time, actually, if you count the time when the gremlin helped the helicopter dodge that fireball. I just hope we didn't exhaust our supply of luck for the next few years, I frowned.
As soon as you get back, I want you to set up a meeting between me and this healer,
Naumov growled as he leapt to his feet.
I want to make sure that my son will be okay if anything happens to me.
For someone his age, he was moving with surprising energy and agility, especially considering the helicopter crash and his head injury. There was a sizable, shiny new hematoma on his forehead, and his right eye was slowly being subsumed by a big yellowish bruise. But nonetheless, the 50-year-old man looked even more intimidating and self-confident than me or Mark.
I understand, I nodded. And that's enough hysteria from you, Naumov warned as he turned to the illusionist, who was still giggling nervously. This isn't Arctania. We need to take everything extremely seriously.
It might sound strange, but I wasn't feeling any particular stress, either from the crash or the explosion that followed. Or more accurately, the stress passed very quickly both times. Maybe Hote was right, and I was simply getting used to things changing around me. Sure, he had phrased it a little differently, hinting that it was just because I was stupid, but I was inclined to think and hope that that was just his bizarre sense of humor. We checked to make sure no one was injured and then hurried off, farther away from the scene of the crash. I tried not to think about the fact that the explosion could start a forest fire. Thankfully, the weather was pretty cool at the time.
Listen, you seem like the sanest person here. What did they use to shoot us down?
The pilot asked as he slowed down to walk next to me.
And in general, what the hell is going on?
Must be some kind of advanced weapon. I have no idea, I replied evasively. I was too lazy even to think of a plausible excuse.
Come on. I'm not an idiot, the pilot grunted. But I don't know what you mean by fireball.
He was having a harder time keeping the pace than the rest of us, but none of us were in the mood to slow down for him.
Even as it was, it seemed like a miracle that we hadn't been found, so we weren't about to test our luck any further.
We were hurrying away from the crash-slash-explosion site at top speed.
Don't get carried away, Mark interjected, having finally overcome his nervous giggling. This is all because of your concussion and the crash.
The pilot shot the kid an angry glare.
I don't even know where the hell you came from. There was a grown man in that seat, and then we crashed, and suddenly we have a gangly beanpole teenager in his place. I told you that all your inconveniences will be compensated, Naumov interjected.
He was clearly getting annoyed.
Let's dispense with the questions. It was just a helicopter crash, a crazy, unfortunate coincidence. That's what we tell everybody.
Of course. I mean, what could be crazier than a military helicopter shooting fireballs at us?
The pilot grumbled. That said, he stopped asking questions after that. As soon as my mana was back to 60, I started thinking it might be a good idea to turn on magnetic sensitivity. That would keep us safe if anyone invisible tried to attack us, but it would also use up invaluable mana that should really be stockpiled in case we got into a full-on battle with our enemies. On the other hand, what if the dark side had already washed their hands of us and flown off to look for the gremlin in the factory? If they were using the same app that I was, they wouldn't have known that the gremlin was on board our helicopter. They simply didn't get close enough to us. Maybe they figured we had also failed to find our target, which is why they simply shot the helicopter down and headed back to the factory?
Let's stop for a few minutes, said the pilot as he sat down on a downed tree trunk. I need a little rest.
We had put quite a bit of distance between ourselves and the helicopter by that point, so we weren't as worried about pursuers. At least until we heard some sticks cracking in the underbrush nearby.
Shh, Mark hissed as he sat down on the ground next to the pilot. Everybody come over here next to me.
Naumov and I complied in silence. We understood exactly why this was necessary. The pilot tried to object, but found hands clapped over his mouth immediately. A few minutes later, two people emerged from the woods. One was a large, extremely heavy-set man, and the other was Bulldog.
Not a sound, Mark repeated in a whisper.
As the pair approached us, we started to be able to hear what they were talking about.
You sure they came this way? The tracks lead this way,
the heavy man replied confidently.
I wish we had Weasel with us.
The next instant, without turning to look at us, the mage whipped out his hand and hurled a ball of fire that exploded right at our feet. The tree that the pilot was sitting on was blown to smithereens, but somehow, again, seemingly miraculously, we were barely hurt at all. I was thrown to the side, and I ducked into a roll as I hit the ground, having glanced at my mana while still in midair. Just 5 more points and I'd have enough to use my lightning.
It's over. You're no better at running away than you were at flying, the heavy man remarked acidly.
The next fireball came roaring toward me. I rolled to the side once again to dodge it. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw that Mark had created exact copies of himself again, which were all running off in different directions.
Illusions don't work very well on players whose intelligence is higher than the illusionist's, said the mage mockingly as he threw another fireball right into the back of one of the fleeing figures.
Mark screamed in pain, and both his copies disappeared immediately. Meanwhile, Bulldog had lunged at Naumov, obviously intending to finish him off. A series of shots unexpectedly rang out. Chapter 2 The big man collapsed to the ground like a cut thistle as several more bullets slammed into the fat mage's body.
With a short, quiet scream, he fell back first down onto the ground. Our pilot rose to his feet. He was squeezing a pistol in one hand. He looked pretty badass. It was like someone had cast a real-life version of Mario in a low-budget shoot-'em-up movie.
"What? You have a gun?"
Nalmov asked. He was flabbergasted. The mustached pilot just shrugged in reply.
"I always carry it with me. You never know."
I ran over to Mark, and for a moment I froze in horrified confusion when I saw a huge black patch of carbonized flesh on his back. The air above him was filled with a sticky, sweet stench.
"Shit," I thought. "Is he dead?"
"Are you okay?" I asked. I couldn't think of anything less boneheaded to say. With a cough and a groan, the kid turned over onto his side.
"Well, it obviously hurts like hell, right? My whole back is on fire."
"Well, I'm just glad it didn't blow a hole right through you," I sighed. Admittedly, it wasn't my best attempt at making light of the situation. "Give me your hand."
"Whoever's with them, they might have heard those shots," the pilot noted.
I helped Mark to his feet, and then we ran off together as fast as we could. Well, maybe ran off is a stretch. The illusionist was barely able to put one foot in front of the other and seemed to be trying to run into every tree that crossed our path. Judging by the way his pupils were lolling around, it looked like he might lose consciousness at any moment. "Get up onto my back," I said. "It'll be quicker that way. Just hang on tight." Thankfully, the kid didn't argue with me and just hung limply onto my neck. For the first time, the fact that he was a tiny little beanpole of a man was coming in handy. I could barely feel the extra weight on my back. This time, it was the pilot and Nalmov who were galloping ahead of us. I could barely keep up. Thankfully, we didn't end up having to schlep through the woods for long. Within about 10 minutes, we trotted our way out to the edge of the highway. We took a few minutes to rest and recover and restore at least a semblance of respectability to our appearances. There weren't many cars on the highway, and nobody seemed to be in any hurry to stop and let four battered, dirty men hitch a ride. Sure, three of us were wearing suits, but that actually made it weirder, given how dirty and torn they were after the helicopter crash and the trek through the forest. The pilot's one-piece flight suit was far more appropriate to the circumstances, and given that it was a working man's outfit anyway, it looked more or less the same as it had prior to the flight.
"I'm surprised you could kill them just like that," I sighed tiredly as I tried in vain to make my suit look halfway presentable,
once the illusionist had finally slumped off my back onto the ground.
"I couldn't have done that."
The pilot looked at me like I was an idiot.
"I didn't kill anybody. That was a dart gun."
Mark and I looked at each other.
"A dart gun?"
"Well, yeah,"
our resident Mario lookalike shrugged.
"How did you miss that? Bullet wounds look totally different. There would have been blood everywhere."
"It sounded like a real gun, and they fell down as soon as you hit them like they were dead,"
Mark objected angrily.
"Personally, I wasn't exactly in the mood to go combing the ground to see if there were any bits of brain scattered all over it."
"I've never really dealt with guns at all," I agreed. "Why would we have guessed that that was a dart gun? Plus, there was blood on their clothes." Nalmov swore quietly to himself.
"We should have finished them off."
"Let's go back then," Mark suggested.
He winced in pain as his arm suddenly twitched and sent a burst of pain through his injured back again.
"They obviously weren't planning to leave us alive, so we aren't obligated to do the same for them."
"Calm down, tough guy," I snapped back at him. "Those emissaries are almost certainly back on their feet already. Anyway, they might not have come alone."
"Yeah, and another thing. Were you planning to kill them yourself?" the pilot asked. "It's not as easy as you probably think it is. Believe me, I've been in combat before. I know what I'm talking about."
Mark turned and showed the pilot his back by way of reply.
"I think I could manage it."
Yeah, you need to get to a hospital right away.
Or better yet, I glanced at Nalmov and the pilot.
To our good friend the doctor. He'll definitely be able to give you whatever help you need.
Unfortunately, our return home took quite a while. First, we had to go to the nearest city along the highway, since we knew for certain that nobody would bring us all the way to Moscow. Once there, Nalmov had a long conversation over the phone, and it was only at the
Sample complete. Ready to continue?